at her, silly, giggling Marie with her lovely brown curls. The Nietzsche Volia were skittering over the roof, rushing toward us in a black tide. "Mal, get him up!" I shouted. I slashed out at the throng of shadows rushing toward us. Mal grabbed Sergei and pulled him away from Marie. He flailed and struggled, but we got him inside and banged the door shut behind us. We half-carried, half-shoved him down the stairs. On the second flight, we heard the roof door blow open above us. I threw a slicing cut of light high, hoping to hit something other than the staircase, and we tumbled down the final flight. We threw ourselves into the main hall, and the doors crashed closed behind us as the Grisha rammed the lock into place. There was a loud thud, and then another, as the Nietzsche Voya tried to break through the door. "Alina!" Mal shouted. I turned and saw the other doors were sealed, but there were still Nietzsche Voya inside. Zoya and Nadia's brother were backed against a wall, using squalor winds to heave tables and chairs and broken bits of furniture at an oncoming pack of shadow soldiers. I raised my hands, and the light swept forward in sizzling cords, tearing through the Nietzsche Voya one by one until they were gone. Zoya dropped her hands, and a samovar fell with a loud clang. At every door, we heard thumping and scraping. The Nietzsche Voya were clawing at the wood, trying to get in, searching for a crack or gap to seep through. The buzzing and clicking seemed to come from all sides. But the fabricators had done their work well. The seals would hold, at least for a little while. Then I looked around the room. The hall was bathed in blood. The walls were smeared with it. The stone floor was wet with it. There were bodies everywhere, little heaps of purple, red, and blue. "Are there any others?" I asked. I couldn't keep the tremor from my voice. Zoya gave a single dazed shake of her head. A spatter of blood covered one of her cheeks.
"We were at dinner," she said. "We heard the bells. We didn't have time to seal the doors. They were just everywhere."
Sergei was sobbing quietly. David looked pale but calm. Nadia had made it down to the hall. She had her arm around Adric, and he still had that stubborn tilt to his chin, though he was shaking. There were three Inferni and two more Corporalkai, one healer and one heartrender. They were all that remained of the Second Army. "Did anyone see Tolia and Tamar?" I asked. But no one had. They might be dead. Or maybe they'd played some part in this disaster. Tamar had disappeared from the dining room. For all I knew, they'd been working with the Darkling all along.
"Nikolai might not have left yet," Mal said. "We could try to make it to the Kingfisher."
I shook my head. If Nikolai wasn't gone, then he and the rest of his family were dead. And possibly Bagra, too. I had a sudden image of Nikolai's body floating face down in the lake behind the splintered pieces of the Kingfisher. No, I would not think that way. I remembered what I thought of Nikolai the first time I'd met him. I had to believe the clever fox would escape this trap, too. "The Darkling concentrated his forces here," I said. "We can make a run for the upper town and try to fight our way out from there."
"We'll never make it," said Sergei, hopelessly. "There are too many of them."
It was true. We'd known it might come to this, but we'd assumed we'd have greater numbers, and the hope of reinforcements from Politznaya. From somewhere in the distance we heard a rolling crack of thunder.
"He's coming," moaned one of the Inferni. "Oh, saints, he's coming."
"He'll kill us all," whispered Sergei.
"If we're lucky," replied Zoya.
It wasn't the most helpful thing to say, but she was right. I'd seen the truth of how the Darkling dealt with traitors in the shadowy depths of his own mother's eyes, and I suspected Zoya and the others would be treated far more harshly. Zoya tried to wipe the blood from her face, but only succeeded in leaving a smear across her cheek.
"I say we try to get to the upper town. I'd rather take my chances with the monsters outside than sit here, waiting for the Darkling."
"The odds aren't good," I warned, hating that I had no hope to offer.
I'm not strong enough to stop them all.
At least with the Nichivoya, it will be relatively quick, David said. I say, we go down fighting.
We all turned to look at him. He seemed a little surprised himself. Then he shrugged. He met my eyes and said,
we do the best we can.
I looked around the circle. One by one, they nodded. I took a breath.
David, do you have any Granatki left?
He pulled two iron cylinders from his kefta.
These are the last.
Use one. Keep the other in reserve. I'll give the signal. When I open the doors, run for the palace gates.
I'm staying with you, Mal said.
I opened my mouth to argue, but one look told me there would be no point. Don't wait for us, I said to the others. I'll give you as much cover as I can. Another clap of thunder split the air. The Grisha plucked rifles from the arms of the dead and gathered around me at the door. All right, I said. I turned and laid my hands on the carved handles. Through my palms I felt the thump of Nichivoya bodies as they heaved themselves against the wood. My wound gave a searing throb. I nodded to Zoya. The lock snicked back. I threw the door open and shouted, "Now!" David lobbed the flash bomb into the twilight as Zoya swooped her arms through the air, lofting the cylinder higher on a squalor draft.
"Get down!" David yelled.
We turned toward the shelter of the hall, eyes squeezed shut, hands thrown over our heads, bracing for the explosion. The blast shook the stone floor beneath our feet, and the glare burned red across my closed lids. We ran. The Nichivoya had scattered, startled by the burst of light and sound, but only seconds later they were whirling back toward us. "Run!" I shouted. I raised my arms and brought the light down in fiery scythes, cutting through the violet sky, carving through one Nichivoya after the next as Mal opened fire. The Grisha ran for the wooded tunnel. I called on every bit of the stag's power, the sea whip's strength, every trick Bagra had ever taught me. I pulled the light toward me and honed it into searing arcs that cut luminous trails through the shadow army. But there were just too many of them. What had it cost the Darkling to raise such a multitude? They surged forward, bodies shifting and whirling like a glittering cloud of beetles, arms stretched forward, sharp talons bared. They pushed the Grisha back from the tunnel, black wings beating the air, the wide, twisted holes of their mouths already yawning open. Then the air came alive with the rattle of gunfire. There were soldiers pouring out of the woods to my left, shooting as they ran. The war cry that issued from their lips raised the hair on my arms. Sancta Alina! They hurtled toward the Nichivoya, drawing swords and sabers, slashing out at the monsters with terrifying ferocity. Some were dressed as farmers, some wore ragged First Army uniforms, but each of them bore identical tattoos. My sunburst, wrought in ink over the sides of their faces. Only two were unmarked. Tolia and Tamar led the charge, eyes wild, blades flashing, roaring my name. Chapter 23 The sun soldiers plunged into the shadow horde, cutting and thrusting, pushing the Nichivoya back as the riflemen fired again and again. But despite their ferocity, they were only human, flesh and steel pitted against living shadow. One by one, the Nichivoya began to pick them off.
"Make for the chapel!" Tamar shouted.
The chapel? Did she plan to throw hymnals at the Darkling?
"We'll be trapped," cried Sergei, running toward me.
"We're already trapped," Mal replied, slinging his rifle onto his back and grabbing my arm. "Let's go." I didn't know what to think, but we were out of options.
"David," I yelled, "the second bomb."
He flung it toward the Nichivoya. His aim was wild, but Zoya was there to help it along. We dove into the woods, the sun soldiers bringing up the rear.
The blast tore through the trees in a gust of white light. Lamps had been lit in the chapel and the door stood open. We burst inside, the echoes from our footfalls bouncing up over the pews and off the glazed blue dome.
"Where do we go?"
Sergei cried in panic. Already we could hear the whirring, clicking hum from outside. Tolya slammed the chapel door shut, dropping a heavy wooden bolt into place. The Sun soldiers took up positions by the windows, rifles in hand. Tamar hurtled over a pew and shot past me up the aisle.
"Come on."
I watched her in confusion. Just where were we supposed to go? She tore past the altar and grasped one gilded wood corner of the triptych. I gaped as the water-damaged panel swung open, revealing the dark mouth of a passageway. This was how the Sun soldiers had gotten onto the grounds, and how the apparat had escaped from the Grand Palace.
"Where does it go?" asked David.
"Does it matter?"
Zoya shot back. The building shook as a loud crack of thunder split the air. The chapel door blew to pieces. Tolya was thrown backward, and darkness flooded through. The darkling came, borne on a tide of shadow, held aloft by monsters who set his feet upon the chapel floor with infinite care.
"Fire!"
Tamar shouted. Shots rang out. The Nichivoya writhed and whirled around the darkling, shifting and reforming as the bullets struck their bodies, one taking the place of another in a seamless tide of shadow. He didn't even break stride. Nichivoya were streaming through the chapel door. Tolya was already on his feet and rushing to my side with pistols drawn. Tamar and Mal flanked me, the Grisha arrayed behind us. I raised my hands, summoning the light, bracing for the onslaught.
"Stand down, Alina," said the darkling. His cool voice echoed through the chapel, cutting through the noise and chaos. "Stand down, and I will spare them." In answer, Tamar scraped one axe blade over the other, raising a horrible shriek of metal on metal. The Sun soldiers lifted their rifles, and I heard the sound of Inferni flint being struck. "Look around, Alina," the darkling said. "You cannot win. You can only watch them die. Come to me now, and I will do them no harm. Not your zealot soldiers, not even the Grisha traitors."
I took in the nightmare of the chapel. The Nichivoya swarmed above us, crowding up against the inside of the dome. They clustered around the darkling in a dense cloud of bodies and wings. Through the windows I could see more, hovering in the twilight sky. The Sun soldiers' faces were determined, but their ranks had been badly thinned. One of them had pimples on his chin. Beneath his tattoo, he didn't look much older than 12. They needed a miracle from their saint, one I couldn't perform. Tolya cocked the triggers on his pistols.
"Hold,"
I said.
"Alina,"
Tamar whispered.
"We can still get you out."
"Hold," I repeated. The Sun soldiers lowered their rifles. Tamar brought her axes to her hips, but kept her grip tight.
"What are your terms?"
I asked. Mal frowned. Tolya shook his head. I didn't care. I knew it might be a ploy, but if there was even a chance of saving their lives, I had to take it.
"Give yourself up," said the darkling. "And they all go free. They can climb down that rabbit hole and disappear forever."
"Free?"
Sergei whispered.
"He's lying," said Mal. "It's what he does."
"I don't need to lie," said the darkling. "Alina wants to come with me."
"She doesn't want any part of you," Mal spat.
"No?"
the darkling asked. His dark hair gleamed in the lamplight of the chapel. Summoning his shadow army had taken its toll. He was thinner, paler, but somehow the sharp angles of his face had only become more beautiful.
I warned you that your Otkazatsia could never understand you, Alina. I told you that he would only come to fear you and resent your power. Tell me I was wrong. You were wrong.
My voice was steady, but doubt rustled in my heart. The Darkling shook his head.
You cannot lie to me. Do you think I could have come to you again and again if you had been less alone? You called me, and I answered.
I couldn't quite believe what I was hearing.
You were there? On the fold. In the palace. Last night.
I flushed as I remembered his body on top of mine. Shame washed through me, but with it came overwhelming relief. I hadn't imagined it all.
That isn't possible,
Mal bit out.
You have no idea what I can make possible, Tracker.
I shut my eyes.
Alina!
I've seen what you truly are, said the Darkling. And I've never turned away. I never will. Can he say the same?
You don't know anything about her,
Mal said fiercely.
Come with me now, and it all stops. The fear, the uncertainty, the bloodshed. Let him go, Alina. Let them all go.
No, I said. But even as I shook my head, something in me cried out, yes. The Darkling sighed and glanced back over his shoulder.
Bring her, he said.
A figure shuffled forward, draped in a heavy shawl, hunched and slow-moving as if every step brought pain.
Bagra. My stomach twisted sickly.
Why did she have to be so stubborn? Why couldn't she have gone with Nikolai? Unless Nikolai had never made it out. The Darkling laid a hand on Bagra's shoulder. She flinched.
Leave her alone, I said angrily. Show them, he said.
She unwound her shawl. I drew in a sharp breath. I heard someone behind me moan. It was not Bagra. I didn't know what it was. The bites were everywhere, raised black ridges of flesh, twisting lumps of tissue that could never be healed, not by Grisha hand or by any other, the unmistakable marks of the Nichivoya. Then I saw the faded flame of her hair, the lovely amber hue of her one remaining eye.
Jenya,
I gasped. We stood in terrible silence. I took a step toward her. Then David pushed past me down the altar steps. Jenya cringed away from him, pulling up her shawl and turned to hide her face. David slowed. He hesitated. Gently, he reached out to touch her shoulder. I saw the rise and fall of her back and knew she was crying. I covered my mouth as a sob tore free from my throat. I'd seen a thousand horrors on this long day. But this was the one that broke me. Jenya cringing away from David like a frightened animal. Luminous Jenya with her alabaster skin and graceful hands. Resilient Jenya, who had endured countless indignities and insults, but who had always held her lovely chin high. Foolish Jenya, who had tried to be my friend, who had dared to show me mercy. David drew his arm around Jenya's shoulders and slowly led her back up the aisle. The Darkling didn't stop them.
I've waged the war you forced me to, Alina, said the Darkling. If you hadn't run from me, the Second Army would still be intact. All those Grisha would still be alive. Your Tracker would be safe and happy with his regiment. When will it be enough? When will you let me stop?
You cannot be helped. Your only hope was to run. Bagra was right.
I'd been a fool to think I could fight him. I'd tried, and countless people had lost their lives for it.
You mourn the people killed in Novokhribirsk, the Darkling continued. The people lost to the fold, but what of the thousands that came before them, given over to endless wars? What of the others dying now on distant shores? Together we can put an end to all of it.
Reasonable. Logical. For once I let the words in. An end to all of it. It's over. I should have felt beaten down by the thought, defeated. But instead it filled me with a curious lightness. Hadn't some part of me known it would end this way all along? The moment the Darkling had slipped his hand over my arm in the Grisha Pavilion so long ago, he'd taken possession of me. I just hadn't realized it. All right, I whispered.
Alina, no!
Mal said furiously.
You'll let them go?
I asked.
All of them?
We need the tracker, said the Darkling. For the Firebird.
He goes free. You can't have both of us. The Darkling paused, then nodded once. I knew he thought he would find a way to claim Mal. Let him believe it. I would never let it happen.
I'm not going anywhere,
Mal said through clenched teeth. I turned to Tolia and Tamar. Take him from here. Even if you have to carry him.
Alina!
We won't go, said Tamar. We are sworn.
You will. Tolia shook his huge head. We pledged our lives to you. All of us.
I turned to face them. Then do as I command, I said. Tolia Yul'Batar. Tamar Kir'Batar. You will take these people from here to safety. I summoned the light, letting it blaze in a glorious halo around me. A cheap trick, but a good one. Nikolai would have been proud.
Do not fail me.
Tamar had tears in her eyes, but she and her brother bowed their heads. Mal hooked my arm and turned me around roughly.
What are you doing?
I want this. I need it. Sacrifice or selfishness, it didn't matter anymore.
I don't believe you.
I can't run from what I am, Mal, from what I'm becoming. I can't bring the Alina you knew back, but I can set you free.
You can't choose him.
There isn't any choice to make. This is what was meant to be. It was true. I felt it in the collar, in the weight of the fetter. For the first time in weeks, I felt strong. He shook his head.
This is all wrong.
The look on his face almost undid me. It was lost, startled, like a little boy standing alone in the ruin of a burning village.
Please, Alina, he said softly. Please, this can't be how it ends.
I rested my hand on his cheek, hoping that there was still enough between us that he would understand. I stood on my toes and kissed the scar on his jaw. I have loved you all my life, Mal. I whispered through my tears. There is no end to our story. I stepped back, memorizing every line of his beloved face. Then I turned and walked up the aisle. My steps were sure. Mal would have a life. He'd find his purpose. I had to seek mine. Nikolai had promised me a chance to save Ravka, to make amends for all I'd done. He'd tried, but it was the Darkling's gift to give.
Alina!
Mal shouted. I heard scuffling behind me and knew Tolia had taken hold of him.
Alina!
His voice was raw white wood torn from the heart of a tree. I did not turn. The Darkling stood waiting, his shadow guard hovering and shifting around him. I was afraid, but beneath the fear, I was eager.
We are alike, he said. As no one else's.
As no one else,
will ever be. The truth of it rang through me. Like calls to like.
He held out his hand, and I stepped into his arms. I cupped the back of his neck, feeling the silken brush of his hair on my fingertips. I knew Mal was watching. I needed him to turn away. I needed him to go. I tilted my face up to the darkling's.
"My power is yours," I whispered. I saw the elation and triumph in his eyes as he lowered his mouth to mine. Our lips met, and the connection between us opened. This was not the way he'd touched me in my visions when he'd come to me as shadow. This was real, and I could drown in it.
Power flowed through me. The power of the stag, its strong heart beating in both our bodies. The life he'd taken, the life I'd tried to save. But I also felt the darkling's power, the power of the black heretic, the power of the fold.
Like calls to like. I'd sensed it when the hummingbird entered the unsee, but I'd been too afraid to embrace it. This time I didn't fight. I let go of my fear, my guilt, my shame. There was darkness inside me. He had put it there, and I would no longer deny it. The Volcra, the Nichivoya, they were my monsters, all of them, and he was my monster too. "My power is yours," I repeated. His arms tightened around me. "And yours is mine," I whispered against his lips. "Mine." The word reverberated through me, through both of us. The shadow soldiers shifted and whirred. I remembered the way it had felt in that snowy glade when the darkling had placed the collar around my neck and seized control of my power. I reached across the connection between us. He reared back.
"What are you doing?"
I knew why he had never intended to kill the sea with himself, why he hadn't wanted to form that second connection. He was afraid. "Mine." I forced my way across the bond forged by Morozova's collar and grabbed hold of the darkling's power. Darkness spilled from him, black ink from his palms, billowing and skittering, booming into the shape of a Nichivoya, forming hands, head, claws, wings. The first of my abominations. The darkling tried to pull away from me, but I clutched him tighter, calling his power, calling the darkness as he had once used the collar to summon my light. Another creature burst forth, and then another. The darkling cried out as it was wrenched from him. I felt it too, felt my heart constrict, as each shadow soldier tore a little bit of me away, exacting the price of its creation.
"Stop!"
the darkling rasped. The Nichivoya whirred nervously around us, clicking and humming faster and faster. One after another, I pulled my dark soldiers into being, and my army rose up around us. The darkling moaned, and so did I. We fell against each other, but still I did not relent.
"You'll kill us both," he cried.
"Yes," I said. The darkling's legs buckled and we collapsed to our knees. This was not the small science. This was magic, something ancient, the making at the heart of the world. It was terrifying, limitless. No wonder the darkling hungered for more. The darkness buzzed and clattered, 1,000 locusts, beetles, hungry flies, clicking their legs, beating their wings. The Nichivoya wavered and reformed, whirring in a frenzy, driven on by his rage and my exultation. Another monster. Another. Blood was pouring from the darkling's nose. The room seemed to rock, and I realized I was convulsing. I was dying, bit by bit, with every monster that wrenched itself free.
"Just a little longer," I thought. "Just a few more, just enough. So I know that I've sent him to the next world before I follow."
"Alina!"
I heard Mal calling as if from a great distance. He was tugging at me, pulling me away.
"No!" I shouted.
"Let me end this! Alina!"
Mal seized my wrist, and a shock passed through me.
Through the haze of blood and shadow, I glimpsed something beautiful, as if through a golden door. He wrenched me away from the Darkling, but not before I called out to my children in one final exhortation. Bring it down. The Darkling slumped to the ground. The monsters rose in a whirling black column around him, then crashed against the walls of the chapel, shaking the little building to its very foundations. Mal had me in his arms and was running up the aisle. The Nichivoya were hurling themselves against the chapel walls. Slabs of plaster crashed to the floor. The blue dome swayed as its supports began to give way. Mal leapt past the altar and plunged into the passage. The smell of wet earth and mold filled my nostrils, mingling with the sweet incense scent of the chapel. He ran, racing against the disaster I'd unleashed. A boom sounded from somewhere far behind us as the chapel collapsed. The impact roared through the passageway. A cloud of dirt and debris struck us with the force of an oncoming wave. Mal flew forward. I tumbled from his arms, and the world came down around us. The first thing I heard was the low rumble of Tolia's voice. I couldn't speak, couldn't scream. All I knew was pain and the relentless weight of the earth. Later I would find out that they'd labored over me for hours, breathing air back into my lungs, staunching the flow of blood, trying to mend the worst breaks in my bones. I drifted in and out of consciousness. My mouth felt dry and swollen shut. I was pretty sure I'd bitten my tongue. I heard Tamar giving orders. Bring the rest of the tunnel down. We need to get as far away from here as we possibly can. Mal. Was he here? Buried beneath the rubble? I could not let them leave him. I forced my lips to form his name. Mal. Could they even hear me? My voice sounded muffled and wrong to my ears. She's hurting. Should we put her under? Tamar asked. I don't want to risk her heart stopping again, replied Tolia. Mal, I repeated. Leave the passage to the convent open, Tamar said to someone. Hopefully he'll think we went out there. The convent, Sancta Elisabetta, the gardens next to the Gritsky mansion. I couldn't order my thoughts. I tried to speak Mal's name again, but I couldn't make my mouth work. The pain was crowding in on me. What if I'd lost him? If I'd had the strength, I would have screamed. I would have railed. Instead, I sank into darkness. When I came to, the world was swaying beneath me. I remembered waking aboard the whaler, and for a terrifying moment I thought I might be on a ship. I opened my eyes, saw earth and rock high above me. We were moving through a massive cavern. I was on my back on some kind of litter, borne between the shoulders of two men. It was a struggle to stay conscious. I'd spent most of my life feeling sick and weak, but I'd never known fatigue like this. I was a husk, hollowed out, scraped clean. If any breeze could have reached us so far below the earth, I would have blown away to nothing. Though every bone and muscle in my body shrieked in protest, I managed to turn my head. Mal was there, lying on another litter, carried along just a few feet beside me. He was watching me as if he'd been waiting for me to wake. He reached out. I found some reservoir of strength and stretched my hand over the litter's edge. When our fingers met, I heard a sob and realized I was crying. I wept with relief that I would not have to live with the burden of his death. But lodged in my gratitude, I felt a bright thorn of resentment. I wept with rage that I would have to live at all. We traveled for miles, through passages so tight that they had to lower my litter to the ground and slide me along the rock, through tunnels high and wide enough for 10 hay carts. I don't know how long we went on that way. There were no nights and days below ground. Mal recovered before I did and limped along beside the litter. He'd been injured when the tunnel collapsed, but the Grisha had restored him. What I had endured, what I had embraced, they had no power to heal. At some point we stopped at a cave dripping with rows of stalactites. I'd heard one of my carriers call it the worm's mouth. When they set me down, Mal was there, and with his help I managed to get into a sitting position, propped against the cave wall. Even that effort left me dizzy, and when he dabbed his sleeve to my nose, I saw that I was bleeding. "How bad is it?" I asked.
"You've looked better," he admitted. "The pilgrims mentioned something called the White Cathedral. I think that's where we're headed."
"They're taking me to the apparat." He glanced around the cavern.
"This is how he escaped the Grand Palace after the coup. How he managed to evade capture for so long."
"It's also how he appeared and disappeared at the fortune-telling party. The mansion was next to the convent of Sancta Lisabetta, remember? Tamar led me straight to him, and then she let him get away." I heard the bitterness in my weak voice. Slowly my addled mind had pieced it all together. Only Tolia and Tamar had known about the party, and they'd arranged for the apparat to meet me. They'd already been among the pilgrims that morning when I'd nearly started the riot. There to watch the sunrise with the faithful, that was how they'd gotten to me so quickly. And Tamar had vanished from the eagle's nest as soon as she'd begun to suspect danger. I knew that the twins and their sun soldiers were the only reason any of the Grisha had survived, but their lies still stung.
"How are the others?"
Mal looked over to where the ragged group of Grisha huddled in the shadows.
"They know about the fetter," he said. "They're frightened."
"And the Firebird?"
He shook his head.
"I don't think so."
"I'll tell them soon enough."
"Sergei isn't doing well," Mal continued. "I think he's still in shock. The rest seem to be holding up."
"Jenya?"
"She and David stay behind the group. She can't move very quickly."
He paused.
"The pilgrims call her Razrushaya."
"The ruined."
"I need to see Tolia and Tamar."
"You need to rest."
"Now,"
I said.
"Please."
He stood but hesitated. When he spoke again, his voice was raw.
"You should have told me what you intended to do."
I looked away. The distance between us felt even deeper than it had before.
"I tried to free you, Mal, from the Darkling, from me."
"You should have let me finish him," I said.
"You should have let me die."
When I heard his footsteps fade, I let my chin droop. I could hear my breath coming in shallow pants. When I worked up the strength to lift my eyes, Tolia and Tamar were kneeling before me, their heads bowed.
"Look at me," I said.
They obeyed. Tolia's sleeves were rolled up, and I saw that his massive forearms were emblazoned with suns.
"Why not just tell me?"
"You never would have let us stay so close," replied Tamar. That was true. Even now I wasn't sure what to make of them.
"If you believe I'm a saint, why not let me die in the chapel? What if that was meant to be my martyrdom?"
"Then you would have died," said Tolia without hesitation. "We wouldn't have found you in the rubble in time or been able to revive you."
"You let Mal come back for me, after you gave me your vow."
"He broke away," said Tamar. I lifted a brow. The day Mal could break Tolia's hold was indeed a day of miracles. Tolia hung his head and heaved his huge shoulders.
"Forgive me," he said. "I couldn't be the one to keep him from you."
I sighed. Some holy warrior.
"Do you serve me?"
"Yes," they said in unison.
"Not the priest?"
"We serve you,"
said Tolia, his voice a fierce rumble.
"We'll see,"
I murmured, and waved them away. They rose to go, but I called them back.
"Some of the pilgrims have taken to calling Jenya Razrushaya. Warn them once. If they speak that word again, cut out their tongues."
They didn't blink, didn't flinch. They made their bows and were gone. The White Cathedral was a cavern of alabaster quartz so vast it might have held a city in its glowing ivory depths. Its walls were damp and bloomed with mushrooms, salt lilies, toadstools shaped like stars. It was buried deep beneath Ravka, somewhere north of the capital. I wanted to meet the priest standing, so I held tight to Mal's arm as we were brought before him, trying to hide the effort it took just to stay upright and the way my body shook.
"Sancta Alina," the apparat said. "You are come to us at last."
Then he fell to his knees in his tattered brown robes. He kissed my hand, my hem. He called out to the faithful. Thousands of them gathered in the belly of the cavern. When he spoke, the very air seemed to tremble.
"We will rise to make a new Ravka," he roared. "A country free from tyrants and kings. We will spill from the earth and drive the shadows back in a tide of righteousness."
Below us, the pilgrims chanted, "Sancta Alina." There were rooms carved into the rock, chambers that glowed ivory and glittered with thin veins of silver. Mal helped me to my quarters, made me eat a few bites of sweet pea porridge, and brought me a pitcher of fresh water to fill the basin. A mirror had been set directly into the stone, and when I glimpsed myself, I let out a little cry. The heavy pitcher shattered on the floor. My skin was pale, stretched tight over jutting bones. My eyes were bruised hollows. My hair had gone completely white, a fall of brittle snow. I touched my fingertips to the glass. Mal's gaze met mine in the reflection.
"I should have warned you," he said.
"I look like a monster."
"More like a kitka."
"Wood sprites eat children."
"Only when they're hungry," he said.
I tried to smile, to hold tight to this glimmer of warmth between us. But I noticed how far from me he stood, arms at his back, like a guard at attention. He mistook the sheen of tears in my eyes.
"It will get better," he said, "once you use your power."
"Of course," I replied, turning away from the mirror, feeling exhaustion and pain settle into my bones. I hesitated, then cast a meaningful glance at the men the apparat had stationed at the door to the chamber. Mal stepped closer. I wanted to press my cheek to his chest, feel his arms around me, listen to the steady human beat of his heart. I didn't. Instead, I spoke low, barely moving my lips.
"I've tried," I whispered. "Something's wrong."
He frowned.
"You can't summon?"
he asked hesitantly. Was there fear in his voice? Hope? Concern? I couldn't tell. All I could sense in him was caution.
"I'm too weak. We're too far below ground. I don't know."
I watched his face, remembering the argument we'd had in the Birchwood Grove, when he'd asked if I would give up being Grisha.
"Never,"
I'd said. "Never." Hopelessness crowded in on me, dense and black, heavy like the press of soil. I didn't want to say the words, didn't want to give voice to the fear I'd carried with me through the long, dark miles beneath the earth. But I forced myself to speak it.
"The light won't come, Mal. My power is gone."
After. Again, the girl dreamed of ships, but this time they flew. They had white wings made of canvas, and a clever-eyed fox stood behind the wheel. Sometimes the fox became a prince who kissed her lips and offered her a jeweled crown. Sometimes he was a red hellhound, foam on his muzzle, snapping at her heels as she ran. Every so often she dreamed of the Firebird. It caught her up in wings of flame and held her as she burned. Long before word came, she knew the Darkling had survived, and that she had failed once more. He had been rescued by his Grisha, and now ruled Ravka from a throne wreathed in shadows, surrounded by his monstrous horde. Whether he'd been weakened by what she'd done in the chapel, she didn't know. He was ancient, and power was familiar to him, as it had never been to her. His Oprichniki guards marched into monasteries and churches, tore up tiles and dug down through the floors seeking the Sun Summoner. Rewards were offered, threats were made, and once again, the girl was hunted. The priest swore that she was safe in the sprawling web of passages that crisscrossed Ravka like a secret map. There were those who claimed the tunnels had been made by armies of the faithful, that it had taken hundreds of years with picks and axes to carve them. Others said they were the work of a monster, a great worm who swallowed soil, rock, root, and gravel, who hollowed out the underground roads that led to the old holy places, where half-remembered prayers were still said. The girl only knew that no place would keep them safe for long. She looked into the faces of her followers, old men, young women, children, soldiers, farmers, convicts. All she saw were corpses, more bodies for the Darkling to lay at her feet. The Apparat wept, shouting his gratitude that the Sun Saint still lived, that she had once again been spared. In his wild black gaze, the girl saw a different truth. A dead martyr was less trouble than a living saint. The prayers of the faithful rose around the boy and the girl, echoing and multiplying beneath the earth, bouncing off the soaring stone walls of the White Cathedral. The Apparat said it was a holy place, their haven, their sanctuary, their home. The boy shook his head. He knew a cell when he saw one. He was wrong, of course. The girl could tell from the way the Apparat watched her struggle to her feet. She heard it in each fragile thump of her heart. This place was no prison. It was a tomb. But the girl had spent long years being invisible. She had already had a ghost's life, hidden from the world and from herself. Better than anyone, she knew the power of things long buried. At night, she heard the boy pacing outside her room, keeping watch with the golden-eyed twins. She lay quiet in her bed, counting her breaths, stretching toward the surface, seeking the light. She thought of the broken skiff, of Novokrybirsk, of red names crowding a crooked church wall. She remembered little human heaps slumped beneath the golden dome. Marie's butchered body. Fedyor, who had once saved her life. She heard the pilgrim's songs and exhortations. She thought of the Volkra and of Jenya huddled in the dark. The girl touched the collar at her neck, the fetter at her wrist. So many men had tried to make her a queen. Now she understood that she was meant for something more. The Darkling had told her he was destined to rule. He had claimed his throne, and part of her, too. He was welcome to it. For the living and the dead, she would make herself a reckoning. She would rise.
This book is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of Ruin and Rising, Book 3 in the Grisha series, free.
This has been an Audible, Inc. production of Siege and Storm. Written by Leigh Bardugo. Narrated by Lauren Fortgang. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright, 2013, by Leigh Bardugo. Production copyright, 2013, by Audible, Inc.
And now a free preview of Ruin and Rising, Book 3 in the Grisha series.
Before. The monster's name was Izumrud, the great worm, and there were those who claimed he had made the tunnels that ran beneath Ravka. Sick with appetite, he ate up silt and gravel, burrowing deeper and deeper into the earth, searching for something to satisfy his hunger, until he'd gone too far and lost himself in the dark. It was just a story. But in the White Cathedral, people were careful not to stray too far from the passages that curled around the main caverns. Strange sounds echoed through the dim warren of tunnels, groans and unexplained rumblings. Cold pockets of silence were broken by low hisses that might be nothing, or might be the sinuous movement of a long body, snaking closer through a nearby passage in search of prey. In those moments it was easy to believe that Izumrud still lived somewhere, waiting to be woken by the call of heroes, dreaming of the fine meal he would have if only some hapless child would walk into his mouth. A beast like that rests. He does not die. The boy brought the girl this tale, and others too. All the new stories he could gather in the early days when he was allowed near her. He would sit beside her bed, trying to get her to eat, listening to the pained whistle of her lungs, and he would tell the story of a river, tamed by a powerful tide-maker and trained to drive through layers of rock, seeking a magic coin. He'd whisper of poor, cursed Pelican, laboring for 1,000 years with his magic pickaxe, leaving caverns and passages in his wake, a lonely creature in search of nothing but distraction, amassing gold and jewels he never intended to spend. Then, one morning, the boy arrived to find his way to the girl's room barred by armed men. And when he would not leave, they dragged him from her door in chains. The priest warned the boy that faith would bring him peace, and obedience would keep him breathing. Locked in her cell, alone but for the drip of the water and the slow beat of her heart, the girl knew the stories of Izumrud were true. She had been swallowed whole, devoured. And in the echoing alabaster belly of the White Cathedral, only the saint remained. The saint woke every day to the sound of her name being chanted, and each day her army grew, its ranks swollen with the hungry and the hopeless, with wounded soldiers and children barely large enough to carry rifles. The priest told the faithful that she would be queen one day, and they believed him. But they wondered at her bruised and mysterious court, the raven-haired squalor with her sharp tongue, the ruined one with her black prayer shawl and hideous scars, the pale scholar who huddled away with his books and strange instruments. These were the sorry remnants of the Second Army, unfit company for a saint. Few knew that she was broken. Whatever power had blessed her, divine or otherwise, was gone, or at least out of reach. Her followers were kept at a distance, so they could not see that her eyes were dark hollows, that her breath came in frightened gasps. She walked slowly, tentatively, her driftwood bones fragile in her body, this sickly girl upon whom all their hopes rested. On the surface, a new king ruled with his shadow army, and he demanded that his son's summoner be returned. He offered threats and rewards, but the answer he received came in the form of a challenge from an outlaw the people had dubbed the Prince of the Air. He struck along the northern border, bombing supply lines, forcing the Shadow King to renew trade and travel across the fold with nothing but luck and Inferni fire to keep the monsters at bay. Some say this challenger was a Lansoff prince. Some say he was a Fjerdan rebel who refused to fight alongside witches. But all agreed he must have powers of his own. The saint rattled the bars of her underground cage. This was her war, and she demanded freedom to fight it. The priest refused. But he'd forgotten that before she'd become a Grisha and a saint, she'd been a ghost of Keremsin. She and the boy had hoarded secrets, as Pelican hoarded treasure. They knew how to be thieves and phantoms, how to hide strength as well as mischief. Like the teachers at the Duke's estate, the priest thought he knew the girl and what she was capable of. He was wrong. He did not hear their hidden language, did not understand the boy's resolve. He did not see the moment the girl ceased to bear her weakness as a burden and began to wear it as a guise. Chapter 1 I stood on a carved stone balcony, arms spread, shivering in my cheap robes, and tried to put on a good show. My kefta was patchwork, sewn together from scraps of the gown I was wearing the night we fled the palace, and garish curtains that I'd been told came from a defunct theater somewhere near Sala. Beads from the lobby chandeliers made up the trim. The embroidery at the cuffs was already coming undone. David and Jenya had done their best, but there were limited resources underground. From a distance, it did the trick, sparkling gold in the light that seemed to emanate from my palms, sending bright glimmers over the ecstatic faces of my followers far below. Up close, it was all loose threads and false shine. Just like me, the threadbare saint. The apparat's voice boomed through the white cathedral, and the crowd swayed, eyes closed, hands raised, a field of poppies, arms like pale stalks shaken by some wind I couldn't feel. I followed a choreographed series of gestures, moving deliberately so that David and whichever Inferni was helping him this morning could track my movements from their position in the chamber, hidden just above the balcony. I dreaded morning prayers, but according to the priest, these false displays were a necessity.
"It is a gift you give your people, Sancta Alina," he said. "It is hope."
Actually, it was an illusion, a pale suggestion of the light I'd once commanded. The golden haze was really Inferni fire, reflected off a beaten mirror dish that David had fashioned from some salvaged glass. It was something like the dishes we'd used in our failed attempt to stave off the Darkling's horde during the battle in Os Alta. We'd been taken by surprise, and my power, our planning, all of David's ingenuity, and Nikolai's resourcefulness hadn't been enough to stop the slaughter. Since then, I'd been unable to summon so much as a sunbeam. But most of the apparat's flock had never seen what their saint could really do, and for now, this deception was enough. The apparat finished his sermon. That was the signal to end. The Inferni let the light flare bright around me. It jumped and wavered erratically, then finally faded as I dropped my arms. Well, now I knew who was on fire duty with David. I cast a scowl up at the cave. Harshaw. He was always getting carried away. Three Inferni had made it out of the battle at the little palace, but one had died just days later from her wounds. Of the two that remained, Harshaw was the most powerful and the most unpredictable. I stepped down from the platform, eager to be out of the apparat's presence, but my foot faltered, and I stumbled. The priest grasped my arm, steadying me.
"Have a care, Alina Starkov. You are incautious with your safety."
"Thanks," I said. I wanted to pull away from him, from the turned soil and incense stench he brought with him everywhere.
"You're feeling poorly today."
"Just clumsy." We both knew that was a lie. I was stronger than when I'd come to the White Cathedral. My bones had mended. I'd managed to keep down meals. But I was still frail, my body plagued by aches and constant fatigue.
"Perhaps a day of rest, then."
I gritted my teeth. "Another day confined to my chamber." I swallowed my frustration and smiled weakly. I knew what he wanted to see. "I'm so cold," I said. "Some time in the kettle would do me good." Strictly speaking, it was true. The kitchens were the one place in the White Cathedral where the damp could be held at bay. By this time, at least one of the breakfast fires would be lit. The big round cavern would be full of the smells of baking bread and the sweet porridge the cooks made